No talking points, no spin. It's politics you can't put down. This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo.
Hi, thanks for tuning in to Still Standing with Michael Caputo. I'm Michael Caputo. I'm trying to get these podcasts done on a more frequent basis. I was going weekly for months and months and months. But now that the bogus Russia hoax is over, and now that the Mueller investigation is over, my business is picking up quickly, and I'm pretty busy, which is great. You know, a lot of us, myself, J.D. Gordon, Carter Page, Shirley, you know, Papadopoulos, all the rest of them, a lot of us haven't worked at all. I mean, some had it worse than others, but all, I'd say, 40, 50 plus individuals sucked into the Russia hoax as witnesses with tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees, hundreds of thousands in some cases like mine. You know, not only do you have to pay those bills, you can't work. Clients don't want you. You know, people get let go. There was actually a mother and a father and the same family fired from their jobs because of their role as witnesses in the Mueller investigation. Yeah. So I'm busy. It's great. I'm very happy about that. And I really hope all the rest of the people who were, you know, abused by this Russia hoax, I hope that they are working as well. I know some of them are, which is great. I know Carter Page is really focused on his lawsuits against the government. I think that's something he's doing for the entire nation. But I hope he's got his clients back and he's working his private equity oil and gas business again. I hope Papadopoulos is working again. I know he's got some kind of Hollywood thing going on, which is cool. It'll be interesting to see. I hope his book's doing well. And anyway, I'm doing PR, you know, marketing, things like that. I've got a lot of clients and doing a lot of things. One of the things I have done a lot of during the investigation and in the run-up to the investigation, as it became clear that all this time they've been surveilling and spying upon the Trump campaign using all the powers at the fingertips of the Obama national security apparatus, of course, abusing those powers, bending the law until, in some cases, it broke. Some of these national security types deserve jail time. I don't think we're going to see it. There is a two-tier justice system, one for me and you, and one for the left, the privileged, the Clinton-favored people, the McCabes, the Comeys, the Clintons, the Jussie Smollett's of the world. They are on the other level, the upper level of the two-tier justice system. Because if you really want to, if they did something wrong, like I think Jussie Smollett's in trouble, and you really want to, you know, punish them like normal people, you want them to hold them accountable for their crimes, you have to work much harder. You have to do much more to try to get somebody like, for example, Jussie Smollett, Hillary Clinton, James Comey. They're covering for each other. That's what came out of the Comey IG report. The fact that they were going to refuse to prosecute James Comey for him breaking the law, him giving, as the inspector general said, a terrible example, leaving a terrible example for the tens of thousands of agents in the FBI. You got to work really hard. You got to do more. It's terrible to think that, you know, people like you and me, you know, all you got to do is run a red light and you've got a problem. But James Comey and the rest of those scumbags can set off a fake investigation that costs millions of dollars of taxpayers, ruins, you know, 500 lives. And let's go the people like Tony Podesta, who did exactly the same thing Paul Manafort did. Okay? So I've got this two-tier justice system, to me, is very interestingly manipulated. And I was actually on Fox and Friends Friday morning, this morning as I'm recording this, talking about this intelligence community asset, this intelligence officer somehow or another related to the national defense apparatus has filed a whistleblower complaint with the inspector general of the national defense, advisor to the president. And of course, we have an acting NDI right now. And so, you know, because things have changed in the administration on that end, our entire national security apparatus is different than it was just months ago. But it's interesting to note that this the complaint was leaked by someone. It could have been the whistleblower. It could have been someone related to the office, the inspector general, or somebody in Congress. Who knows? Who actually knows about this, right? So, I mean, who actually knew what the content of this was? You saw this leaked to the Washington Post just recently, and you've also watched as one day the story breaks, and the next day, the story's advanced a little bit. The next day, we find out that the complaint, the first day we find out the complaint exists, and that it's being held back, and that we're not showing it to Congress, right? This argument between them, right? How does Congress know that there's a whistleblower complaint at the DNI? Well, I mean, I'm quite certain this is orchestrated, but they're probably notified as well. On the second day, we begin to find out that it has something to do with the president, not just anybody, right? And on the next day, they advance a story with further leaks. Each one of these leaks, by the way, is a crime. Okay, the first one saying that it existed, the second one saying it was a president, the third one advancing the story more saying it was about the president's conversation with President Zelensky of Ukraine and a promise he made. So this orchestrated leak, which made the story dominate the news through the entire week and will therefore dominate the news through the Sunday shows. You understand, the goal of a good PR person in public relations for politicians, for parties, for candidates, is to dominate the news for an entire week and then to be the number one topic on the Sunday news shows. This is the fixation, the goal of all PR people like me. Bring out the story on Monday, run it up the flagpole several different times by advancing it with information, further information, growing the story so that it's big enough. And if you're really successful, you'll dominate the Sunday shows. I mean, most people in PR just want to get on the Sunday shows. Just maybe get your issues discussed by one of them, because there are huge ratings for these shows. But if you were the lead issue on every one of these Sunday shows, that is the trifecta, the grand slam home run of political public relations. This week, the secret whistleblower complaining about Donald Trump's conversation with Volodymyr Zelensky, the new president of Ukraine, this will be the number one issue on all Sunday shows. It's going to be the trifecta for whoever that works for Obama who is actually orchestrating this. For the group of PR people who are signed up to work in this little project, they all have to spin it, right? I mean, these reporters, they don't find this stuff. It is given to them tied in a bow. You understand? It's leaked to one reporter, one outlet, Washington Post in this case, right? And they talk about, oh my God, right? This whistleblower from the intelligence community who's made a complaint at the DNI, and the DNI is not going to show it to Congress. That reporter is the first reporter. And then the story is advanced with that same reporter over and over again. And but the person who's been leaking, breaking the law, committing a felony, because this is communication between the president and another president, leaking that information is a felony, right? This person who leaked it and then leaked it again and then leaked again and again to advance the story, that actually gets to be pretty big by the second story. And so there are other people on the team who are advancing this story, who are helping get the spin out there. So this actually, the care and feeding of this story across the entire mainstream media resistance complex, it's actually more than one person can do. So there are more people involved in this. I know. I used to do it. I didn't leak information illegally or commit felonies like these people are. But you understand that General Flynn is in trouble and charged because someone leaked a conversation he had with the ambassador of Russia. A perfectly legal conversation. That was leaked to the Washington Post. And that person who leaked it is a felon. They committed a grave crime against this country. But now that we know that person will never be found, by the way, the person who leaked on Flynn will never be discussed or even searched for. That person walked away scot-free. So you understand these leaks, that was 2 years ago, right? That was what? January 2017, so it's 2.5 years ago when they screwed Flynn by leaking illegally his conversation with the Russian ambassador. This is 2 years, 6 months later. The people who are placing this story to try to make it last and hugely impactful, terribly difficult for the president of the United States, then make it on the Sunday shows, high fives all around over it, bull feathers. Right? These people, they're not afraid. The person who actually came out and broke the law, committed a felony, and leaked the information about General Flynn, that was a ballsy move. Because we didn't really know, certainly the Obama types and the Hillary types who are all involved in this little conspiracy it's a soft coup. That's what it is. To try to remove the President of the United States. These people didn't know in January 2017 whether or not they'd get away scot-free breaking the law like that. I got my ideas as to who's involved here, but you usually have to look at communications people. You got to look at communications people who were involved in national security, right? Ben Rhodes, for example, comes to mind. Ben Rhodes was a communications guy for the National Security Council under Obama. The National Security Council, as you know, if you don't, I'll tell you. The National Security Council was the staff size of the National Security Council was grown almost three times over by Obama. There was like 100 people in the National Security Council in the White House that he inherited from George W. Bush. Barack Obama hired 180 more, I think the number was. Average age, by the way, 25, 26, 25 and a half. And that tilted that agency into a millennial skinny-jeaned haven. But also, now, if you look at the size of the National Security Council, it's gotten smaller. Not just Bolton, other people have left, but there are two-thirds of that organization are Obama holdovers. These were not political appointments. These were permanent staffing hires to the National Security Council. Who was the communications guy there? Ben Rhodes. I can tell you, in my mind, just from my experience in this business, and I have plenty, this is coming from the National Security Council. Now, the Obama White House, I've read and I've heard from reporters in the know, told everybody to stay in place as long as they could, to hang on. The National Security Council that he had tripled was going to serve Obama after he left the White House, after he moved up the street. I guess it's Connecticut Avenue where he lives now, so that he could run the resistance and manage his piece of it. He's got a piece of it. There's no question. So Ben Rhodes, I don't know, maybe he's the guy. But somebody who understands communications, who knows reporters, whose job it was to get to know reporters, has got to be coordinating this. All right, in charge of coordination. There might be some younger people who we don't know who are just, you know, good spin men and women, spin masters who can help get this stuff out. But somebody's got to, and back in the day when I first got into PR, somebody's got to do the faxing. That was what we used to. Who's going to do the faxing? Now it's emails and stuff that's ultimately traceable. But guys like Ben Rhodes, they know how to communicate without a trace. Of course they do. He's done it a long time. Remember, he was in charge in the Obama White House of lying to the American people about the Iran deal. You think he's got a problem lying about Donald Trump and then a conversation with Volodymyr Zelensky, the new president of Ukraine? Of course not. But let me just go a little deeper into this. This is a program designed by a broader group of people, which includes intelligence community sources who were left in place by Obama, most likely at the National Security Council, bringing forward information that they think they can damage Donald Trump with. Doesn't have to be a home run. Doesn't have to be a kill shot, right? It's just got to be something that they can put into the pan as they're weighing up impeachment in the House. That's what this is all about anyway. It's about impeachment, right? So, you know, some intelligence operative, one of the 20-somethings hired by Obama, maybe they're 31 years old now, and the skinny jeans are getting a little tight, right? That beard doesn't look so great when the top of your head's balding now, does it? Yeah. That person gets to hear, overhear, sees a summary, understands that the President of the United States is talking about something that's objectionable with the president of another nation and leaks it, right? He goes to, not directly to the media. He's not a media guy. He's a national security jock, right? He brings it to the group, probably Ben Rhodes and those, that ilk, and says, I got this. And they get together, the communicators, and decide how to roll this out and who to roll it out with. Now, it's a target of opportunity. This is not something they planted on Donald Trump. It's something Donald Trump did. By the way, the President of the United States can say almost whatever he damn well pleases to the president of another nation, and it's none of their goddamn business what he says. I am 150% confident that the president did not betray the interests of the United States of America with President Zelensky. That is ridiculous, especially as he said in his tweet, on a phone line that he knew was highly populated. It's a nice way of saying he's always being listened to, even by his own people, even by the skinny jean wearing beard thinning 30 something former millennial person at the National Security Council who's been waiting for his chance to serve Obama properly. 2 years I've been in this job without President Obama working for Donald Trump, and finally I get my hands on something I think is going to be valuable to Ben. So they get it all together. They sell it out there. They move it out one day by day by day. This is not a leak. This is not just a leak. This is a media relations strategy. So now we know, I can tell you, that is the process of how it happened. That is exactly what happened here. All right. Who committed the crime? Well, probably both. But, you know, the whistleblower went apparently to the official organs in order to do this. In order to, you know, put this information into the bloodstream of the government. It's exactly what they were doing. You know, that, you know, think about it. You've got information. If you leak it to the media, you risk yourself, you know, like there's that brave scumbag who leaked on General Flynn, right? So you instead put it into the bloodstream as a whistleblower, and then tell the House, Chairman Schiff, that, hey, there's a whistleblower complaint in about Donald Trump. You need to ask for it. Because where did this start, really, the drumbeat really start coming? It came from Congress. So the whistleblower told, I don't know, a communicator. Let's just call that random communicator, you know. What are we going to call him? Ben, right? And Ben is like, okay, I'm going to find the right reporter. Let's get this into the bloodstream via the whistleblower statutes. And that way you're safe. And we'll get this out there. Let me tell you something. These whistleblower complaints, whistleblowers are an important part of the American government tradition, right? It's absolutely true. I've worked with whistleblowers versus DOD, versus the United States Patent and Trademark Office, you know, others. It gets really important to have at least some apparatus, some avenue for someone with a real important concern. FEMA comes to mind. I've been working with some whistleblowers from FEMA for 10 years, right? But if you were an anti-Trump leaker in the intelligence community, afraid that you're about to be exposed with an investigation into something you let out there, told your pal Ben about something the president said to a president, might you not seek protection by calling yourself a whistleblower? That's what Cheryl Atkinson, the incredible reporter, asked on Twitter today. Caught my eye. Because this group, if you look how they got the dossier into the bloodstream, as they say in Washington, into the bloodstream, they got it by finally finding a reporter who would write it and using that reporter's report to bring it back to the FISA court. And to, you know, that was how they got it. Michael Isikoff of Yahoo News, wrote about his old friend, dossier, the Fusion FBI dossier. Glenn Simpson, his old buddy from the Wall Street Journal, gave it to him and said, please, please, just any story at all mentioning the fact that that the president was briefed on this by the FBI director, just a mention. And then suddenly that story appears. They use that story to then leverage Fusion FBI's paperwork into getting a FISA warrant on at least Carter Page. See, it's about getting it in the bloodstream. Finally, God, nobody, believe me, nobody in their right mind is choosing Michael Isikoff at Yahoo News to break something like a dam burst of information. That's not where you go. They ended up at Yahoo News with Michael Isikoff because nobody else in journalism, no matter how fake news they are or scummy they are in their ethics, nobody else would write it. Well, Mother Jones wrote it. But David Korn, I like David Korn. Not real fond of Michael Isikoff because he still pretends to be a journalist. David Korn is very honest that his opinions lead his stories. And David Korn's actually a very talented writer. I despise the opinion of Mother Jones, but they have great writers. I don't consider Isikoff even a journalist anymore after he understood what he was doing on behalf of his friend Glenn Simpson working for the FBI. But get it in the bloodstream, right? Get it in the bloodstream. They got this in the bloodstream. Let's say the fictitious Ben took the information, passed it on to a reporter, and then they leak it out day by day by day. Why? To damage Trump. But here's the interesting thing that you need to know. The content of this is going to come out. I'm guessing, but I'm a pretty good guesser, that Donald Trump was speaking to President Zelensky about the information that Ukraine was actually colluding directly with the Democrats and Hillary Clinton on several different fronts. Completely, lock, stock, and barrel, the Ukrainian government of Poroshenko, President Poroshenko, which was put in place by the United States government, was beholden to the United States and Ukraine. They tried very hard to defeat Donald Trump, did overt activity to do so and covert activity to do so, and got caught when Donald Trump won. And they were really worried. In fact, the people of Ukraine have punished the Poroshenko administration by unelecting them this summer and electing someone else to reform Ukraine. Ukraine, as it stands today, the administration of Volodymyr Zelensky bears zero responsibility for what the administration of Poroshenko did, the embassy did in Washington to try to help Hillary Clinton win. I'm going to guess that this is a conversation between Zelensky and Donald Trump on that issue. It would be an appropriate issue for the presidents to be speaking about in confidence. Now, we also know, and I'm going to tell you, I was in Ukraine recently for a long, for over a week, taping interviews for a new documentary I have coming out. I talked about it on Fox and Friends this morning, called American Standard Ukraine. I was over there talking to the highest ranking Ukrainians available about these very issues. And I know and can tell you with great confidence that the Zelensky administration, the incoming Zelensky administration, a comic who was elected president of Ukraine, that tells you how sick the people of Ukraine were of the Poroshenko regime. A good guy, by the way, Zelensky. I have high hopes for him, but bright, more of a personality, TV personality than a politician. Sounds familiar, right? They have been panicked ever since they understood exactly what his predecessor was doing to try to defeat Donald Trump. I'll go through it real quickly. This is what Zelensky found out. I know this because I just got back from Ukraine. My jet lag just wore off, right? We know that a parliamentarian directly related to the Poroshenko regime in Poroshenko's party, named Leshenko, created a dossier, or at least was given a dossier, that appears now to be fake. It was a ledger of transactions, cash disbursements for people from the Yanukovych regime, the previous president's regime, which was unseated in the Maidan massacre. He fled in order not to be killed, and the Poroshenko regime took over. This ledger apparently had entries saying Paul Manafort was getting money. This ledger was released while I was still with the Trump campaign, and it really upended the campaign. In fact, if you can take out the chairman of a campaign of a federal campaign with activity like this, that is the best deployment of opposition research possible. And now we understand that Lyshenko's ledger may in fact have been fabricated. In fact, it's under investigation in Ukraine right now. And Lyshenko, who was at that time saying, "I'm revealing this because Donald Trump must not be elected." Must not be elected. I'm revealing this. We have to stop him. Well, as soon as he was elected, he was like, "Well, I didn't really mean that. I wasn't, as a member of the Poroshenko regime, as a leading Poroshenko representative in the parliament, working to help beat Donald Trump on behalf of Hillary Clinton." But they did. No question that this man did it with Poroshenko's input, with his approval. There's no way Lyshenko would have done anything without Poroshenko saying that he could do it. Beyond that, what else did they do? The Ukrainian embassy in Washington, no doubt under the orders of Poroshenko, Ambassador Chali from Ukraine had her operatives inside the Ukrainian embassy on M Street, working directly with the Democratic National Committee and the Hillary Clinton campaign, through a cutout, giving them information to try to help them defeat Donald Trump. No question. Ukrainian embassy, just like every embassy, meets with all the candidates across the board of both parties during the process for many reasons. Among them, just education, but also to brief them on their nation so that they don't get their policy prescriptions wrong. However, Chali would not let her people meet with Donald Trump. I know that because I interviewed Andrei Telezhenko in Ukraine, who was an operative for the Ukrainian embassy. He told me that he was not allowed to talk to Donald Trump. In fact, he set a meeting with Ted Cruz's campaign, and Chali forced him to cancel that meeting. An embarrassment, really, when you work hard to get a meeting with the senior people in Washington and you have to cancel. People are like, "What the hell is that about?" Right? Embarrassing. But it was absolutely under the order of the ambassador, who undoubtedly was not acting without the absolute complete assent of the president of the Ukraine. So Hillary Clinton was absolutely, and the Democratic National Committee was absolutely colluding, conspiring with the Ukrainian government, which was doing it officially, okay, as high as the president. Why? Because in Ukraine, the U.S. embassy is absolutely in charge of just about anything. I'll talk about it in my film. But as the U.S. Embassy says, so it goes in Kyiv. At least it used to. Zelensky should be different. But because the U.S. Embassy had so much to do with the Maidan protest, which ended up in a massacre, of course, which overthrew a president they did not want in Yanukovych, you can assume that Poroshenko was in some way, shape, or form talking to the U.S. Embassy. You know, one of the things Lyshenko did, the parliamentarian who presented that fake ledger, is he did it with an organization called NABU, N-A-B-U. It's an independent Ukrainian investigative group that was set up by, with the help of, and under the sponsorship and tutelage of, the United States Embassy. NABU would do nothing without conferring with the U.S. Embassy. They may not seek the approval of the embassy, but the embassy is in their shorts all the time, NABU shorts. NABU was very big in the release of this fake ledger. So it goes on and on and on. And then we have, of course, Biden's situation with Hunter Biden. You know, Biden becomes responsible for U.S.-Ukraine relations, and he suddenly, mysteriously, miraculously, and very, very handsomely paid, very lucratively, Hunter Biden joins the board of the largest gas company in Ukraine, Burisma. So these are all things that went down while Donald Trump was running for president and before the Biden stuff. Biden was really the point man on Ukraine. So Poroshenko and his ilk are pulling these games on Donald Trump. You wonder where Biden is in this mix, right? Well, anyway, I'm sure Donald Trump wants to find out. I'm sure all of America deserves to know how and why the Hillary Clinton campaign, and apparently, in some ways, the official Washington under Obama Biden, how much were they doing to create and to this cooperation between Hillary Clinton and Ukraine? In fact, I got to tell you something. After my trip to Ukraine, I can tell you that the people of Ukraine want to know. And certainly the president of Ukraine wants to know. Absolutely wants to know, because he stands to lose a lot of ground with the United States, his most important ally, who just, by the way, decided to finally send them weapons. Obama never sent them weapons. And Donald Trump, if he's so pro-Russia, sent them weapons to fight Russia. So Zelensky is, I'd say, desperate to prove to Donald Trump that he's no Poroshenko. And so this is how the telephone conversation opens up. I imagine Donald Trump getting him on the line and Zelensky saying, "Mr. President, we're very sorry for what Poroshenko did. We don't believe in it at all, but the people of Ukraine have punished them and sent them packing." And the President Trump probably said, "I'd really want to know more about that. The people of America deserve to know. The people of Ukraine deserve to know, because that's just wrong. It's wrong. Let's talk about how we can get this out there." Because let me ask you, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, we know that the President of the United States can have any conversation he freaking wants with any other president in the world and enjoy the importance of confidence. Just because it's Donald Trump doesn't mean some 31-year-old puke in the National Security Council can blow up his presidency with the help of his old pals that used to work around the OEOB with him back in the good days of Barack Obama. All right? The president should be able to talk about anything he wants. If you think the president is treasonous, then you're a sick fuck, right? This whole Russia hoax has gotten into your brain. The president, I believe, would never do anything of that sort. But by the way, he's the president of the United States, and he deserves the presumption of secrecy when he talks to another head of state. Nothing in what I'm imagining that happened there seems to be illegal to me. What is the promise then that this, you know, millennial NSC type is saying the president promised? What is the promise? I bet you there was some kind of commitment, because you don't have a discussion with another head of state without seeking or granting a commitment. They're always horse trading. What is that promise? I don't know. But the President of the United States is qualified and authorized and completely within his rights to make promises, you dope. But see, it doesn't really matter if this is a crime. It doesn't really matter if Donald Trump, you know, promised them free nights at the Trump Hotel if they just go ahead and do this. Doesn't matter, okay? Doesn't matter, because what matters here is the story. Donald Trump and his administration have been fighting against this story leaked by a weaponized national security apparatus, spun out there by long-standing communicators who have been doing this since President Trump won his election, behind the scenes working with reporters who are compliant, even stenographers, when it comes to resistance stories. Let me tell you something. Dan Jones, who has this Penn Quarter group, who is now funding Fusion FBI and Glenn Simpson's continued, by the way, Fusion FBI is still going on. It's still happening. In fact, they're spending far more than they ever did on their dossier than during the Hillary Clinton campaign. It is still going on. It is going on and on and on. I'll bet you Dan Jones has got a hand in this whole thing. Dan Jones had his hands on everything. Most everything. He was spinning out lies about me, J.D. Gordon, poor Carter Page, George Papadopoulos, spinning that crap out, and is still sending out an email to reporters every week on the investigations. Still. He's still pumping out Russia Trump information, even though this vaunted, experienced investigator, Special Counsel Robert Mueller, determined that there was no collusion. There was no conspiracy. There's no evidence that anyone in America worked with Russians for anything. So, funny. But maybe Dan Jones got his hands in this. But it's about the story, you know. Big story one day, the next day advance it, the next day advance it, move it all the way to the Sunday shows. And then, of course, into congressional hearings, which, by design, will happen in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and then the story is repeated again. On all of the information you've seen regurgitated in the media all week, this week is repeated in, I guess, in this case, the House Intelligence Committee and Chairman Schiff. They'll do a dog and pony show, and all designed to try to get Americans to believe increasingly that Donald Trump must be impeached. It's the story that matters. We're not going to find that anything at all happened here. In fact, at the end, just like the Russia hoax, just like so many things coming out of this compliant media, oops, it's really nothing. That's what this is. It's really, it's disgusting. It's disgusting. Yeah. Well, I'll be right back after these messages, okay? I know I've gone on now for almost 40 minutes. I'll come back, give you a few more minutes. Thanks a lot for listening. This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo. Remember, everything is at stillstandingpodcast.com. Still standing.
Please remain standing. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Still Standing. This is Michael Caputo back at you. I want to thank you for giving a positive review on Apple iTunes podcasts. You can catch me on Stitcher, all the usual platforms, even radio.com. I'm very proud of being a podcaster on radio.com. And of course on Patreon, where Patreon.com, you can actually support us financially with a donation, a patron through Patreon.com. We consider our patrons to be executive producers of our podcast. People like Elizabeth Younger, Henry Wotazek, John Seaford, executive producers, Susan Havey, Sonia Carlin, Thomas Fulton, Darcy Swenson, Daniel Markey, Stephen Flaminio, Samantha Lynn, Rachel, Brian Pizdersky, Susan Stevens, Jack Bromwich, Jordan Gostomsky, Julie, Patty Freeling. Our executive producers, Bill Grant, Greg Mumbach, Mark Berry, and Gary Stokes. Thanks to all you guys for your support. I really appreciate it. You can support Still Standing podcast at patreon.com. Remember, stillstandingpodcast.com to sign up. Give you an email every time I'm putting something out. I'm sorry it hasn't been as consistent as it was before, but after this report's out, I'm busy as hell. But I wanted to talk for a minute about something that's really important to me, because this summer, one of the reasons why I didn't really do all the podcasts maybe I should have is because I was in Puerto Rico working on behalf of the victims of Puerto Rico. 2 years later, this island is in shambles. There's a slow recovery going on there, kind of a lingering recovery, too long. And I think that's a problem for Donald Trump. I do, because it looks like about 400,000 plus Puerto Ricans left the island after the storm since September 20th, 2017, 2 years ago today. And many of those people settled in the I-4 corridor of Florida, the Orlando area. In fact, they say the largest percentage of those people landed and stayed in Florida. And they're pissed off, people. They're pissed, not because Donald Trump has done anything wrong. I mean, FEMA has made mistakes, but FEMA, I mean, that organization has always made mistakes. It's hard to react and help people recover to something so massive as a hurricane or an earthquake or whatever. FEMA does the best they can. They can do better. In fact, there's corruption there. We need to correct it. There's been bribery. It needs to be punished. But the real problem are the insurance companies. And I'll tell you this really quick. The people of San Juan and all around the island of Puerto Rico are getting less than 10%, less than 10 cents on a dollar for their damages. If you wrecked your car and you had $4,000 in damages, and you went to them and said to your insurance company, say, here's the bill for $4,000. They'd say, if this was Puerto Rico, they would give you less than $400. And they would say, pound sand. It's a take it or leave it offer. The insurance companies aren't American. They're actually Spanish. The big one is MAFRE. They're now coming into the United States. You should stay away from MAFRE. What they're doing to people, they're also doing to governments and government agencies in Puerto Rico. The prisons, the prisoners are living under blue tarps for 2 years now because the prisons presented MAFRE with their damages, and they got less than 10 cents on a dollar. Same thing with cities and municipalities, 78 of them on the island of Puerto Rico. All of them have massive damage, senior centers wiped out, youth centers wiped out, entire administration buildings wiped out, real serious problems. Some of those cities are over $100 million in damages, billions in damages, and these 78 municipalities, they're getting 10 cents on the dollar. So your senior center in Puerto Rico is never going to serve your grandma. The youth center, the recreation centers are never going to keep your kids off the street. Crime goes up. These cities go bankrupt. The communities fall apart. The families, working class families who had their savings tied up in their homes, they only get 10% of that value. They've lost all their savings. That means kids don't go to college because they can't get a second mortgage on their house in order to pay their kids' college, and shit goes downhill from there. The insurance companies, none of them American, I think most of them Spanish, like MAFRE, are bankrupting the island of Puerto Rico. This is going to be a cataclysm, and it's going to be realized fast. That creates a problem for Donald Trump because not just FEMA screwed up, but the insurance companies are acting in a way they would never work anywhere in the United States. They would never do this to the people, the governments, the government agencies, the mayors of Ohio. In Ohio, MAFRE, for example, now has the naming rights on the Columbus Crew soccer stadium. They're moving out there trying to get the car insurance and home insurance of all the people of Ohio. They would never pay out 10 cents on a dollar. They'd be tarred and feathered and run off back to Spain. But imagine also that MAFRE decided, what the hell, I'm going to sue the city of Columbus because they're trying to get paid what they're owed. That's what they're doing in Puerto Rico. Ladies and gentlemen, Puerto Rico is America. They should be treated as Americans, as fairly as Americans, at least. They can't vote for the president of Puerto Rico, but if they relocate to Orlando, they can vote against him. They can register to vote in the I-4 corridor of Florida. 100,000 Puerto Ricans have moved there, and the Democrats are registering them. These are new voters. Our only saving grace is that most Puerto Ricans are more concerned about the politics on their island than they are the politics on the mainland. And so they want to vote absentee in Puerto Rico so that they can choose the next governor. And of course, Puerto Rico cannot vote in the U.S. election. It's a territory in the presidential election. They want to vote absentee in Puerto Rico, more important to them than voting in their physical location, which is Orlando. But if the Democrats succeed, and they are succeeding, reports from organizations show that there is at least in November 2018, voter registration organizations working for the Democrats said they had 45,000 new Puerto Rican displaced voters. So by now, as the presidential election gets closer for 2020, they're going to be 100,000. And if we don't get a handle on the problem in Puerto Rico in the wake of Hurricane Maria 2 years later, the president is going to lose Florida. That's what I wrote in my op-ed on realclearpolitics.com that popped today, realclearpolitics.com. I wrote an opinion article entitled, "Will Hurricane Maria Defeat Donald Trump?" I think it's a problem. I think it can be fixed. I think the president, his fortunes with Puerto Rico's voters, the people, the Puerto Ricans who live in the mainland and vote for president, his fortunes have not been carved in stone. I think he can fix it. There are a lot of things he can do. He's being unfairly criticized. But right now, as it stands, the trajectory of this, the Democrats are quietly, successfully registering displaced Puerto Rican voters in the I-4 corridor of Florida. The president can lose Florida, and if he loses Florida, he loses his presidency. It's a problem. The details are at realclearpolitics.com. Will Hurricane Maria defeat Donald Trump? I sure as hell hope not. The campaign and the White House can do something about it right now. Again, Michael Caputo, for real clear politics. I'm sorry, real clear politics. Yeah, for real clear politics today, but mostly always today and forever, for stillstandingpodcast.com. Give us a like over on iTunes. Sign up on our email at stillstandingpodcast.com. I'll try and get to you again next week. I promise. Watch this space. Watch as the Sunday shows are dominated by this bogus Intel whistleblower crap, and it ends up being nothing. But don't forget, the House hearings are coming. It's a charade. It's a comedy. It is a shame we live in Russia.